I've learned through the years that our stories are powerful and unique, and they connect us. Martin Buber, who is a 20th century theologian, said, "One could never hold a significant conversation with another person until each had heard the other's life story." And just a little plug here, I learned that 2 weeks ago in EFM. And if you have not done EFM yet, let me commend it to you that you run and register for next year. It is the best thing ever. So tonight, in an attempt to do what I was asked to do, which was speak to how my faith and my life intersected, or how my faith became real in my life, I am going to take the easy way out and simply tell you my story. Some of you might have noticed that at times I do not pray as is typical of an Episcopalian. And the reason for that, as Father Lonnie said, is I began my walk in the way of the Episcopal branch of the Way of Jesus in 2018. I am a cradle Southern Baptist, which is a term I made up. And the prayer I offer tonight is number 54 in the 1991 Baptist hymnal, "Great is Thy Faithfulness," written by a Methodist minister who later became a life insurance agent, and brought to the common vernacular in the Crusades of the Reverend Billy Graham. For me, that hymn pulls me to the poetry of the Lamentations, taking its chorus from chapter 3. And oddly enough, that was a book of the Bible that resonated with me from a young age. It felt like a reflection of my life story, of the faithful nature of our God, of His love and mercy, and the reason for the hope and trust that we have in Him. Now, I recognize it may seem odd for a young child to have a connection with the Bible, and particularly that book within it, but my siblings will tell you, if Kindles had existed when I was very little, I would not have spoken to a human soul. Books were my retreat into another world. When I was 10 years old, my granddaddy Shields died, and I loved him dearly. And the United Steelworkers Local 2020 in Fairfield, Alabama, brought the most beautiful memorial Bible to my Nana. It was in a small cedar box, and it had, when you opened it, an image of the risen Christ on the left-hand cover. To this day, it was the most beautiful book and the most beautiful Bible I had ever seen. I attached to it so hard that my Nana, whether she wanted to or not, handed it over to me, and I was inspired to read it cover to cover over that next year. When I had completed it, I was baptized. By way of background, I am the youngest of four children, and admittedly, I was born into a family of privilege. In my mind's eye, I can still see the wonderful woman that my mother employed as help in our family in the running of her home. Even as a small girl, I knew our cultural lingo in my hometown of Birmingham. I knew what the club was, the chamber. My parents were at the helm of multiple businesses and owned multiple homes, and they had connections. Clubs for cards and dinner and dancing, and I thought it was so glamorous to hear about their train rides to go and watch the University of Alabama play in the Sugar Bowl, and trips to fish in the Gulf. I was also the epileptic child in our community. It's an interesting story how I was diagnosed. I was at our church-based kindergarten. We were playing Duck, Duck, Goose, and I was in a full run, and one of the teachers thought that it was odd that a child would come to a full stop and daydream. As you might suspect, it wasn't a daydream. It was, in fact, an absent seizure in that era called a petit-mal. And over the years, my seizures escalated in both frequency and complexity. And I was the child that would seize at school and at camp and in the cafeteria. And you know how kind other children can be. What happened eventually was it affected my breathing, and EMS responses ensued. And unfortunately, there was a taboo with some of my teachers that they did not realize that that did not affect my intellect. At times, I recall they would even articulate to me in a different way, even more loudly, because they might have even thought it affected my hearing, something that both confused and amused me. While I don't think this was the definition of being fearfully and wonderfully made, I could actually be the source of terror for some. In my home or school or anywhere, looking back now after 3 decades as a registered nurse, I have forgotten what it's like to see someone seize for the first time. I can't imagine the dread of watching your child do so. Admittedly, my mother could not face the word seizures with her child, and she resorted to calling them spells, which to this day I have to chuckle about. And I had absolutely no ethics with it. If my mother asked me to do something that I found distasteful, I would tell her I felt like I had a spell coming up. And this life was wonderful and beautiful and happy until it all came crashing down. In time, their businesses failed, and thus their resources dried up. And the world changed for my parents. And as an adult, I could see now that my father lost his identity and he ran from God and he succumbed to the many substances used to fuel darkness in our fallen world. And that became a long period of years where every day of my life, my father told me that the reason that I had seizures was because God hated me and I was worthless. He perpetrated many other things on myself and one of my sisters because we were the 2 children remaining at home, things that daughters should never have to experience. And he was the source of my lamentations. When I finally took the step that as a clinician I know now many children never do, to disclose to an adult, I did so with one of my church leaders, and it was unfortunately overlooked. As a woman of faith, I can now view this through a lens of forgiveness, as our Father calls us to, and that has allowed me to believe the best in these individuals, that they were uneducated, unaware of their obligations to report, blinded and unsuspecting of one of their own who was a pillar in the community. He was a leader, and they could not reconcile such a thing. And shortly after, my family stopped going to church. However, by God's provision, our local Presbyterian church operated a bus ministry. And even now, I am not sure how or why, but at the time, it was as natural to me as the rain. I accessed that ministry and continued in the church. I not only continued, I thrived. I participated in Sunday school and later youth group. I attended church camp, and I served by caring for the children in the nursery, and I am sure that is what drove me to my clinical specialty later, a newborn intensive care. As an aside, I also had an awareness at a young age of what the IRS was because of the day they knocked on our door. It seemed to me that in leveraging lenders and pitting creditors against one another, the family business being afloat came to an end, and the shock of their arrival sent my mom to her bed. But I have a vivid memory of working with the agents to remove our personal items from our automobiles and handing the keys over to them so they could drive them away. When they shuttered our businesses and posted the notice on them that day, we were allowed to stay in our primary residence until it sold, and we ended up in an apartment in a new community. As soon as I was old enough to do so, I started working. And over the next few years, I recall there were times that my mother and I would resort to cleaning out any stash of coinage that we had in the house to buy food. And I became a pro at wrapping pennies, but it worked. And by the provision of God, there was always enough. There was always a way. Because of my experience in hospitals, I was at the Children's Hospital of Alabama every few months through my childhood. I knew from an early age what I would do when I grew up. I have a yearbook from the 7th grade that says, "You're going to be a great nurse one day." And by God's provision, my path to nursing was effortless, like breathing. Without consideration of the possibility of failure, the Lord was with me. Who should I fear? I walked into the largest academic medical center in the Southeast as a teenager and found my home. I found a way to provide myself, provide for myself and educate myself, and most importantly, a way to care for others. Through this, I felt alive and seen, and I felt the tangible presence of God as I cared for the tiniest of patients. The smallest patient I ever cared for was 12 and one-third ounces at birth. In this unit, for the first time, I audibly heard the voice of the Father, and I'm humbled to say it was not the last time. And each time it happens, I am filled with an abject sense of awe and gratitude. I was caring for a baby girl with a congenital heart defect, a baby I had also retrieved as her flight nurse, and she had survived a complex operative procedure, but unfortunately had a complication and was now very ill. We had so much equipment on her, I was fearful that we looked at her as less of a baby and more of a laboratory experiment. And that night, as I was at her bedside, I was praying as I worked, and tears were streaming down. And as I recall, I was angry. I was at the situation, at myself and her other caregivers, and if I could admit it, angry at God. And as I got my prayer out and finished, I recall having the thoughts, this is inhumane. Enough is enough. I don't know why we're doing this. And firmly and audibly, I heard, your ways are not my ways. And it stopped me in my tracks. And I didn't know in the moment what was happening, but I understood immediately that God was in control and my role was to do what I was called to, which was provide care. And as you might guess, she began what was a miraculous turnaround. And less than a week later, I was bathing her to prepare her to go home with her family. Lastly, the Father's greatest gift to me occurred right around this time, when I met and married Eric Salzgiver. We were 20 and 21 in a Presbyterian church, and a handful of years later, we started our family. We eventually migrated back to the Southern Baptist branch of the faith, traditions, and ultimately Eric was ordained as a deacon, and we jumped in together to serve our assigned families. We attended the National Southern Baptist Convention and plunged into other ministries. And while we've traveled over the years from where we started, both locationally and in our faith tradition, serving God and His people have been a consistent source of great joy for us both. Eric continues to be a lesson for me. Because of my childhood, the representation of God the Father was hard for me to wrap my mind around. But through seeing Him as a Father and His example and the example of my dear father-in-law, I have come to a place to understand the beauty and the oversight of God the Father. And in our 33 years together, I can share that our Heavenly Father has been steadfast in His love and provision for our family. In closing, if you would allow me to, I'd like to leave you where I started by sharing from the third chapter of Lamentations. The thought of my affliction and my homelessness is wormwood and gall. My soul continually thinks of it and is bowed down within me. But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I will hope in Him. The Lord is good to those who wait for Him, to the soul that seeks Him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for one to bear the yoke in youth, to sit alone in silence when the Lord has imposed it, to put one's mouth to the dust, there may yet be hope, to give one's cheek to the smiter and be filled with insults. For the Lord will not reject forever. Although He causes grief, He will have compassion according to the abundance of His steadfast love, for He does not willingly afflict or grieve anyone. Amen.